Next item on the agenda is the petition proposal for the Marine Resource Commission to designate an area as a public clam grounds within the Pecosin River in the city of Pecosin.
I don't think this one will take as long as my previous one. Okay, so I have a little housekeeping on this one too. So we got two letters came in after your packet, both in support of designating this area a clam ground. So as you recall, last month we requested commission approve a public hearing to consider whether to designate an area at the mouth of the Pecosin River in the city of Pecosin as public clamming grounds. This is pursuant to a section of the code that allows for, it actually says an application. We don't really have an application form to petition commission. So when people came to me about this, I said, well, you could submit a request in writing or a petition. So what we got was a petition with a lot of signatures on it. This is located, again, at the mouth of the Pecosin River. My glasses, so I can see what I'm doing. Near Bennett's Creek to the east and Pecosin River proper to the west. So the section of code is pertinent here is 28.2632. I think it's important to probably read this into the record what it says. Any ground in the waters of this commonwealth not assigned to anyone for planting or bathing purposes may be, on application of 20 or more citizens, to the officer assigned to the district in which the land lies. And this law is so old, it contemplates district officers who would have accepted these at the time. I'm sort of like the district officer now as head of...
Yes, you are.
But I'm not a law enforcement officer. But anyway, that's an antiquated section of the code. So they would have... 20 more citizens would ask to the district in which the land lies, laid off and designated as public clam grounds. Or the commissioner may do so without any such petition, provided in his opinion no oyster interest will suffer. And clams that are of sufficient quantity to be caught, of at least 225 clams or $1.50's worth per day, this is how old this code section is, and taking clams from such ground. If the ground is laid off, the commissioner shall designate by stakes the meets and bounds of such ground and also have a plat made to be recorded in the clerk's office of the county where the ground lies. All costs of surveying, platting, and recording shall be paid by the applicant. And that's kind of tricky here as to who that is when you have a petition. Such ground shall be set apart and remain a public clamming ground for the common use of the citizens of Virginia so long as the commissioner determines it shall not be assigned to anyone during such period. So you did get this petition, and we accepted it under this section of the code, and it kind of sat for a while because there was a lot of other things going on. And I'll give you some history of this as briefly as I can so you understand how we got to the point where we are. There may be some people on the commission. I don't know if anyone's on here that remembers back to Oyster Company of Virginia. But this area was a subject of a previous oyster ground applications. Again, here's a map with a photograph behind it. It's the general area we're talking about is right here. This shows you how long a fetch this has across the Chesapeake Bay. Pretty considerable. This is the petition. This is an unsigned one that was submitted as part of the petitioner's request to the city of Pecosin to support this. But we do have a number of petitions with a lot of signatures, a lot more than 20. So the petition described the code section and a general description of the area and a map with it, and basically references back to this 2011 previous action by the commission. Get back to that in a minute. So we did have previous oyster grant applications in this same area in 2006 that were heavily protested by local residents. The nature of those protests were many, but they included that there was submerged aquatic vegetation in the area, the fear that cages would be put on the lease, or that float aquaculture would eventually be proposed in the area, which could result in the loss of gear during storm events in light of the nearly unlimited fetch in the area. They also cited conflicts with other uses of the property, recreational uses, to include clamming, boating, swimming, and fishing. They also expressed their nearby property owners' concerns that use of this for commercial aquaculture activities could adversely impact their highland property values. This sounds familiar from this morning. The applications were presented to the commission, and they were denied at the time. At that time, there was some discussion at the hearing that perhaps this area should be set aside as either public clam ground or just designated by the commission as an area that would not be leased for shellfish and aquaculture activities. However, no designation occurred at that hearing, and the area remained open for application. Subsequently, a portion of this area along the western part, which would be this lease right here, was applied for and granted, because it was not protested. That was in 2011. In 2012, an application was submitted for a small lease in this area that was protested and was heard at the July Commission meeting in 2016. That would be this lease right here. At that meeting, the initial motion was to grant the lease and then set the remaining area aside. It was noted at the time that since setting aside such an area would require additional review by the commission staff, that motion was then amended to only approve the lease area, leaving the rest of the area still vacant and could be applied for. Since that time, we have received three applications in this area, in the same area that's being requested by the petition. Since the petition predates any of these three pending applications, commission action on the petition request is required before we can continue processing any further these pending applications. If the entire area that's requested by the petition is set aside, then there will be no area available for the three pending leases. There's a fourth application in this area right here that we do not believe is part of this argument. We don't believe at staff level it would make sense to add this into this area. It'd be very oddly shaped. And I think we'll handle this application on its own merits. It does have some SAV issues, and the applicant's aware of that. But the other three applications, which are shown here, this one, and this one, are all within this general area that's asked by the petition. So these would be affected by any action by the commission today. The petitions were submitted to VMRC and contained 91 signatures. Pocosin City Council in January of 2016 passed a resolution endorsing similar petitions with only 30 signatures at the time for this area to be designated as public clam grounds. City Council also sent letters dated October 11, 2016, signed by their mayor, to Delegate Gordon Helsel and Senator Tommy Norman. The letters requested any assistance they could provide related to the petition to set the area aside as public clam grounds. Staff has received a number of letters and emails in support of this designation. Specifically, the petition asked for an area of approximately 425 acres. And that's the petition that the City Council approved unanimously. You'll see the vote at the bottom. I highlighted the two sections, and this is in your packet. They also made a bunch of comments about the Lynnhaven River issue at the time, because that was going on. But that's not germane to this discussion, but the one that says whereas in the middle, that's about Pocosin, and then section two is specifically about the Pocosin clamming petition. They did go on record in support of that. So the applicants asked for 425 acres. So this is the area they asked for. And at that time, we already had that one application there. So Some of the area has been leased, as I noted, to the west, so that full 425 acres is not really fully available. And we cannot ascertain for certain where the mean low water line is here, because it is, as you can see in this photo, it's extremely shallow along the shoreline. This is a series of sandbars, and these are riparian leases, pretty old, some of them, so it's uncertain whether that's where mean low water still is in this location. And it would really require a survey of this whole area to determine where mean low water is, should the commission want to approve this petition. But based on this is what would really be available after the lease if we went all the way to the shore. And again, this is a riparian, so you see how far ashore it is. And a riparian is supposed to start at mean low water. So that just shows you how shallow it was when we did that one. This is my attempt to show what might actually be available here at mean low water. We have not surveyed it, but based on this contour line that you see meandering around through here, you know, that, at least on a chart, is an estimation of about where mean low water might be, more or less. And I kind of straightened it out just to come up with an acreage. So that's more or less the acreage that we're looking at. This would encompass all three of the pending applications, and the fourth lease to the east is not really part of this. This area has been the subject of previous applications, most of which were protested. And while some of the area has been leased, most remains vacant. The area does appear to be conducive to the natural propagation of clams. The extended fetch in this area along the hard bottom of most of the area would appear to create potential issues if we were to lease this area and on-bottom cages were to be used. Additionally, there is some submerged aquatic vegetation, mostly on the eastern section of this. Historically, there has been more SAV in this area. Staff requested and received a written report from VIMS concerning the petition. In the report, they note that much of the inner half of the requested area has historically supported SAV and dense SAV. However, the area in question has not recovered to pre-dieback levels that existed prior to 2005. While the report acknowledges the code section that allows for the petition request to set aside such areas for public clamming grounds, they comment that the requirements of such a petition, and I quote, cannot be expected to apply to the fisheries and economic situations of today. Staff, however, notes that this is the code section that we are under, and it is rather old, but it is the law of the land. So people have the right to petition the commission under this code section, even though it's antiquated, and the commission has to adhere to the law, and that's why we're before the commission to see what you want to do here. The VIMS report further acknowledges a lack of current data on actual clam resource in the area. Previous research did indicate a presence of clams in this area, but in fairly low densities. They further note that the harvest of clams could have some adverse impact on any SAV, depending on the method of harvest. The report recommends starting any approved public clamming ground approximately 900 feet from the shoreline to better protect existing and potential SAV. So that raised a question for me as to where was 900 feet from the shoreline, because you have a shoreline here, but you also have a mean low water that's 500 to 600 feet or more offshore. I did talk to VIMS about it. I think they had some of the same concerns. And if JJ is still here, you might want to weigh in here. I think, and I don't want to get too deep into weeds on this or the SAV without JJ commenting, but you know, generally speaking, I don't think we see SAV in intertidal areas, which this area between my blue line and the actual marsh shoreline might very well be intertidal, but that's also the same area that Vim said where the most vegetation has been. So the commission cannot set aside above mean low water. So if you designate this area, we will survey it, and we will determine to the best of our capability where mean low water is, and that would be the landward boundary. Anything landward of that, even if it has SAV growing on it, is someone's private property. We don't have any jurisdiction over it. So again, VIMS may want to weigh in a little more on that issue. The current coverage of SAB here is not as robust as it had been in the past. Because this is so shallow, I don't think at staff level we anticipate there's going to be a heavy clam harvest here. There's little clam harvest in the state anymore by boat. It's mostly done on the shore and shallow water. So to dredge this the way they used to do out here right off of Newport News is probably not going to happen here because it's just not amenable. The water's too shallow. I think the type of clamming here would be just the public, just individual people going out in their small boat and raking for clams. And there's not many places. We get a lot of calls from the public. Where can I go hand rake some clams? And we usually say, the Eastern Shore. And they say, where? Well, the Eastern Shore. There's lots of clams on the Eastern Shore. Just don't get on somebody's lease. So on the Western Shore, there's not a whole lot of places. This is one of them where there are naturally amenable spots for clams to grow. And I have personally done some clamming here to the west, not on someone's lease. So there are some clams in this area, but they're not real dense. And to be honest, you know, I think part of the reason for this petition is the landowners in this area do not want to see this leased for aquaculture in cages. And this is a vehicle, I guess, to put it politely, to get this area out of the leasing system and designated some other way. The commission did wrestle with this, like I said, in previous applications of what to do here. I know that the commission's reluctant to take ground out of potential leasing, but staff recommended that perhaps this area ought to be clam ground or some other designation previously. We maintain that. The fetch here is almost unlimited. Aquaculture cages or floats here we think would be problematic in trying to secure them and keep them secured. So we support the petition. So our summary and recommendation is, in light of the considerable support that we received, and as of today, I received no one in opposition to it, and other letters of support, as well as the city of Pocosin, who submitted a new letter just this week, again reiterating, and it's in your packet as well, it's a similar letter to their previous endorsement of the petition, saying they still support it unanimously. And the mayor wanted me to relay that to you. I believe they're here if they've managed to endure this long today. And they may want to speak to that. So in light of all those things, we would suggest that the commission do set this aside, excluding any leases that would be inside of it that are beyond mean low water, like this one, if mean low water goes inshore of it, which I hope it does. We leave where we weren't supposed to. So any leases that are currently in this area. The other thing the commission may want to consider, and I'll defer to your legal counsel, is if we survey this to mean low water, then it becomes public claiming ground. Any landowner along the shoreline that owns 205 feet, can get a riparian right now. So you may want to consider whether the code trumps any action the commission would take today to set this aside, or whether you just want to state that in your motion if you would approve this, that this is contingent upon any riparian landowner still being able to exercise their riparian right. My feeling is that the code probably trumps it, but I'll leave it up to what Kelsey may tell you. So again, if it's approved, it would be up to mean low water and under consideration of riparian rights. I'd be happy to try to answer any questions. I think there's a number of people here in support.
Yep.
I don't know if there's anybody here in opposition, but we didn't receive any opposition.
Okay. Questions of Mr. Ballard.
What mechanisms would there be if we designate this as public ground and 10 years from now we look at the harvest records and find out 10 clams have been harvested? Is there a mechanism to take it back out of public ground?
I think any action the commission takes, the commission can undo. This is not like you're making it Baylor ground, or
right.
You know, it won't be protected by the Constitution like Baylor ground. The commission has designated other areas as public ground of some sort. There's one in Virginia Beach and Lynn Haven. And that actually expired and was reauthorized by the commission after it had expired. So the commission has the authority to designate this area. And obviously, we have a code section here. Clam ground, but you could designate this area as an area not to be leased. The commission has done that on a rare occasion in a few places. But any commission action, I think, this commission takes could be changed by any future commission.
For the, Ms. Block?
You can also explicitly in the statute set a time limit.
That's what happened in Virginia Beach. It was for 10 years. And it expired. And at the time, Bob Grab, who was head of Habitat, asked me, why did I take it off the map? And I said, because it expired. He said, well, you should have taken it back to the commission and asked them, did they want to renew it? I said, they approved it for 10 years. They didn't say 10 years and bring it back and renew it. They just, but we did bring it back, and it was reinstated. So, but she's right. I mean, you could put a grandfather clause on it.
Also, Kelsey, if I'm correct, under 28.2216, hearings before the commission, any person whose rights, duties, or privileges, including matters relating to licenses, shellfish planting grounds, fishing stands, or any other who have been or may be affected by any action or inaction of the commission or commissioner without a formal hearing may demand in writing a formal hearing of his complaint. So I think there is a right to petition under that one as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would say so, although this is technically the opportunity for a formal hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So this action or inaction is with a formal hearing.
That's correct, but they can, somebody can still come back tomorrow and request one. That's
certainly. We did notify that there's two leaseholders involved here. There's three leases, but two of them are the same person. We did send a notification to them. I did not hear back from them. I don't know if they're here today. Now, I think they could say they'd be aggrieved by this because they applied here, even though they applied after the petition. And we informed them there was a petition here. But we did notify them of this hearing as well. But again, I'll defer to Kelsey. I think if you approve this, their applications would be basically null and void. They could request, I guess, a hearing under that law that they've been aggrieved somehow, but they were notified.
Yeah, just as a clarification, 28.2632 does say that areas designated as public claiming ground shall not be assigned to anyone during the period, whatever period the commission determines. So, yeah, it wouldn't be assigned to anybody.
Okay. Further questions? Ms. Everett.
This may be for you, Commissioner Roman, but I guess a question for me is that given that it seems like some of the intention of the support for this is really to prevent aquaculture leases.
That's presumptive, I think.
Okay. So
correct to be informed of it, but likely presumptive.
Yeah. I guess, yeah, that's, I just...
We don't have a document, I don't think, on file that says, I really want to have this set aside because I don't want any aquaculture and I don't want any leases there.
I think that's involved in it, but I think there are clams here, so there's an argument.
Uh-huh.
So I read in the petition, not appropriate for shellfish leasing. But yes, like you said, you could obviously it's presumptive or maybe read different ways. But I guess that's the question is, how do you know, is this decision we're making setting a precedent for a vehicle that may just prevent aquaculture versus the intention of this being truly for the purpose of this code of public waste ground?
I think every application, I think that to be the short answer, but every application that we receive stands on its own of individual merits with whatever motivations that we glean from the public hearing assigned there too. That's what I would think. So I think, you know, certainly got the right in the public hearing if somebody speaks to ask them, well, why do you want it?
So excluding the Eastern Shore, which has a lot of good clam ground, there's not a whole lot of areas on the Western Shore where this law would apply because they really aren't suitable areas for clams. You wouldn't set aside an area for clam ground if it was not suitable. Even with this really low threshold that's in the law, you know, 225 clams or $1.50 a day. I mean, it could be used as that vehicle to try to block, you know, a leasing somewhere. But most of the other applications you see on the Western Shore, they're protested by landowners, and I don't think they would try to use this mechanism.
But the bottom line is they may try that vehicle, but we still drive the bus.
That's correct.
So it won't. It probably wouldn't be a more common vehicle used in the future.
Never seen it other than this one time in the years that I've been around here.
Thank you.
Mr. Ballard?
To your knowledge, have we heard from anyone actually engaged in the clamming industry or any kind of wild fisheries industries that plans on dredging this ground or harvesting off it?
No. Okay. Dr. Neal?
I guess I'm just going to make some comments. I live on the other side of the Pecosin River from here. This area is an area, it is not really industrial clamming, it's recreational clamming. We run over there, we jump out of our boats, and we hand rake, and that's it. I'm actually more likely to go a little downriver to Marsh Point, right. And so that's kind of so it's in Pecosin. I mean, this is their recreation. This is what they actually do have a theater down and stuff, and some restaurants and things.
Pretty good ball team. We beat them from Smithfield, but that's okay. That's all right.
But I don't think we would be setting this aside as a commercial clamming ground. I mean, the Ballards have taken that away. They've cornered the market. I can't find chowder clams anymore unless I go rake them. Actually, I don't go rake them. I go send one of my young people out to go rake them.
Okay.
But anyway, that's really what this is. And this particular area is I'm not that familiar with. Like I said, I'm more would go down to Mark Point. Am I breaking the law down there? We got any leases down there that?
We can discuss that after the meeting, Dr. Neal. I don't think I'll do that public.
Okay.
Go Packers.
Yeah. You got further comments, questions at this point? Okay. This is a public hearing. Thank you, Ben. Anyone here in support of this matter wishes to be heard? Yes, sir.
They have a presentation. Let's get you started.
Would you do me a favor, sir?
Yes. Give me a second here. I'm Robert Cox. I live in Pecosin. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Would you raise your right hand, please? You solemnly swear testimony you'll give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Thank you. Proceed, please, Mr. Cox.
Good afternoon. My name is Robert Cox. I said I'm in Pecosin. I live in Pecosin. I'm the petition coordinator. I'm joined. We'd like to give you a presentation. Much of it's been covered by Mr. Stagg.
And as petition coordinator, you consider yourself an applicant, correct?
I do indeed.
Thank you.
Along with we found out 95. Was
okay, sir. Thank you.
And I'll be speaking on behalf of the citizens who signed the petition who not been able to be here today, together with two of my colleagues who follow when I speak. We're not sure if there's other petitioners here attending the hearing who'd like to address the commission. Maybe they will, but we're very pleased to have our Vice Mayor Freeman and Councillor Southall and our City Manager Randy Wheeler with us to support us. Thank you.
Good to have y'all.
We have an outline of what we'd like to talk to you about. We'll try and skip over. Much of it's already been covered, but you can see what we would like to address the commission about. I'd first like to have Steve introduce you to the area, to the unique situation that we're in. I think Mr. Stagg alluded to it. There is a special part of the coastline here that we're talking
about. Sir, would you raise your right hand? You solemnly swear the testimony you give be the truth, whole truth, none but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
Thank you, sir.
My name is Steve Corneliuson, Stephen T. Corneliuson. I live at 202 Beach Road, and I don't know how to shift from slide to slide, but Rob's going to... Okay. And then I can go back like that. Okay. I should say, what we have here is Rob Cox and Julian Cox. Among us, I've lived on this water for a third of a century, and Julian, who looks to me like he's at least 40, has lived there, has been around it his whole life, and Rob's been there for a long time, so we have, we've been here for a long time, and I should just say, given the way your discussion has gone so far, just to be frank and candid, I was glad that Dr. Neal said that the clamming is, it was, I believe it was you who said the clamming is recreational. That's right. I'm no waterman expert, but I suspect that the judgment is right that there won't be big time commercial clammers out there. But I know from living there for a third of a century that it is recreational clamming. It seems to me that that's within the law,
And we'll also be candid and forthright right from the beginning. Yes, indeed, as you saw from everybody in Pocosin in 2011 and have seen since, and we'll see with four people representing our city and the nearly 100 who signed the petition, we're thinking of more than just the recreational clambers, but they are included in what I propose to talk very briefly about right now. My job is to set the stage with a few pictures so that everybody knows what the stakes are. This is looking out my front window, and I'd like to just say I need about 5 minutes, and I've got 10 photos, but I want to read what we think the takeaway is. The precious sand bottom multiple use public water in question belongs neither to shoreline homeowners nor commercial enterprise. This was said this morning, I thought, eloquently by some of your speakers for the Rappahannock issue. It belongs to everybody, and lots of people use it. That's my main point, by the way. Lots of people use it, including clammers. It's a unique waterway crossroads. It's dynamic, multiple use, and much cherished. And I already know I want to go ahead of myself to talk about a slide that's coming. One thing that Julian is going to emphasize, I'm going to emphasize too. When you look out in front of my house and in front of Rob's house and see that, you could say, well, these are the waterfront homeowners, and they're worried about the water in front of them. And that's true, and we candidly admit it. Matter of fact, we assert it. And one thing that Rob is going to talk about is the effect on not only on of misuse of this water, not only on property values for us, but on city revenues. Anyway, just to set the stage, this is looking across the mouth of the Pocosin River, right? There's Seaford over there. The bay is off to the right. And here you just see the beginning of the recreational stuff, a couple of little girls playing, somebody in a lawn chair, some water recreation equipment, some kids on a stand-up paddleboard. It's important to emphasize that we have commercial uses of this area, including crabbers and also gillnetters. I want to say that a friend who lives in York County and serves on a Chesapeake Bay Environmental Board says, look, for people in the oyster business to do their good work, they only need a tiny fraction of the bay. He emphasizes the environmental benefits. He's right. My friend is also right, if you ask me, in his respect and admiration for watermen and their good work. I want to report that we petitioners share that outlook. I mean, we're from Pocosin. We get all that. But we don't think that this area should be set aside, taken away from commercial uses, the other commercial uses, including potentially clamming, but the recreational clamming and the other recreational uses. By the way, I should have said back on this one, you're not looking there at low tide. Mr. Stagg emphasized how shallow this water is, but at a super low tide, there are seven large protective sandbars that appear, leaving, you know, well more than 100 yards to get out just even to wading water. At any normal tide, you have to walk a quarter mile to get the water up to your chest, and if you want water over your head, please send a postcard when you get there. That's how shallow this water is. I already showed you the commercial crabbers. Here's a picture that Julian took of a family out clamming. And it's exactly what happens is that people come, often they come in their boats because they don't, it isn't just us. It's not just the people on this shoreline. It's people who live up in the creeks and come from elsewhere besides Wisconsin. This is a picture of a family that, you know, anchored a couple of boats and went clamming. Here's a picture of some people that have anchored to go swimming. It's not just watercraft. There are all kinds of activities that take place out there. It also contains this area, a frequently used chart-designated overnight anchorage spot for big boats a little further out. Uh, we were talking about. I was talking about people coming from, emerging from Bennett's Creek and Roberts Creek and the marinas and so forth. This is the Pocosin Waterways Crossroads. This is a picture of some seniors out hugging the shoreline at high tide, traveling across the north shore of Pocosin and the mouth of the Pocosin River. This photo might be the most important one for demonstrating that it's not just the shoreline homeowners here who own and use this water. No one knew who these guys were. They certainly weren't neighbors. We don't know who was doing this kind of, to us, kind of exotic thing of coming kite surfing. My wife Sarah took this photo in November. So I ask you, what other patch of water attracts kite surfers in November? Again, we think it just goes to show that what we're talking about is a precious public asset. Thanks in part to the Pocosin Blue Way, we see kayakers visiting the waterway, Pocosin's waterway crossroads regularly. Here's a picture that raises a question. Question that came up this morning: how well do high-speed watercraft mix with submerged or semi-submerged obstructions? I mentioned this aerial photo a minute ago. It reports that the water in question serves recreational users from nearby marinas and tributary waterways. Julian's going to say something about it too. It's a crossroads of close and water activity, including commercial activity and also including recreational clamming. So what we're talking about, those sandbars I was talking about along Griffin's Beach, are these. And so Roberts Creek and Lions Creek and Bennett's Creek and all these other places, boats emerge, and the place that they come, either in transit or for recreation, is there. But the proposed clamming ground also attracts people even more widely. This is a picture from the Daily Press from late April. They also had some video. A Jefferson Lab engineer, former colleague of mine actually, named Dave Cashy, Dr. Neal may know him, he lives over on the Seaford side that you could see in that earlier picture. He had a national windsurfing event in late April on this water. Now it was up above the area being petitioned about, but it included access to the area being petitioned about. So I want to read excerpts from his letter about how he sees the importance of leaving this area of the Pocosin River open. These are excerpts from his letter to you. Just briefly, I windsurf, foil surf, catamaran, water ski, wakeboard, and paddleboard all over the mouth of the Pocosin River. I write in support of the designation of public clamming ground for the Pocosin River, Pocosin Flats area. As you may know, I brought windsurfers from all over the world to the U.S. Windsurfing National Windsurfing Festival for our national championship regatta. If some of the waters are taken by commercial enterprise, it would be a danger to me and my friends. Once in a while, we have a sailor launch from York Point, and they have to break down, or the wind either drops off or builds up too much, and they end up floating or swimming to Pocosin. If there is a farm of cages, this could be very dangerous. So this is my voice again. This is coming to the last thing I have to say. We petitioners emphasize the uniqueness of the waters in question. You'll hear my friends, Rob and Julian Cox. I don't remember if I mentioned to you that it's a coincidence that they have the same last name. We think that those waters' involvement in a national event underline that uniqueness that we talk about for the petition for area. And that brings me back to that takeaway message. I would like to say it again. The precious sand bottom, multiple use, commercial and recreational water in question today belongs neither to us shoreline homeowners nor to any commercial enterprise. As somebody said eloquently this morning, it belongs to everybody. What can be said especially about our petition for area is that lots of people use it. We believe that permanently designating it a public clamming ground would preserve not only clamming, but all the other uses of this Pocosin Waterway crossroads. I thank you for the chance to talk to you, and I stand aside for Rob.
I was going to talk about this, but I think Mr. Stagg has covered it. I just mentioned that our petition far exceeds the 20 signatures needed to meet the legal requirement, and that there are currently no assigned leases in this public clamming ground. We'll call it the PCG area for make things shorter. So there should be no impact on oyster interests on this site at this point. Steve has given you an idea of the wide variety of uses, and this part of the coast and shoreline is an ideal clamming area. I was surprised to hear Mr. Stagg say it's moderate, but I know this is used for clamming, as we've seen in that, by families and everybody. And the sandy bottom supports eelgrass, and it's historically been used by the public for clamming and crabbing for generations. And really, to address you, to address the question that was asked earlier, I think, or raised earlier, petitioning for this part of the shoreline through a public clamming ground, yes, it really is the only option that we have available to us to preserve this important part of Pocosin's heritage for future generations. The clamming aspect and the other area, other parts of the use of the area. This following slide shows that it is the only remaining area that is open to the Pocosin citizens and others to get access for clamming. You can see the rest of the shoreline, this is the city boundary, the rest of the immediate shoreline is totally given over to private leasing. In 2011, a VMRC engineering recommended this area, the 425 acres that you saw on the slide that Mr. Stagg showed, as not suitable for leasing, and for these various reasons. I won't go through them right now, but you've seen some of them from Mr. Stagg, including the long fetch. I want to be clear that the petitioners fully support the oyster farming in public waters where the site-specific conditions are suitable, just like you heard in the earlier discussions this morning. But we certainly believe that staff got it right in 2011 when they found this particular site unsuitable. So back to the lease status in May of this year, where we are right now. They cover the entire public clamming ground area that we're requesting. And we'd like to come back to some of these issues, and Julian will now discuss the first of those concerns, which is the access to the open water.
Do you solemnly swear the testimony you give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Good to see you again, Mr. Cox. Can I ask real quick, is there anybody here in opposition to this matter? Thank you. Proceed.
Steve, let's see. I'm getting angry. Steve emphasized the importance of this slide because it shows the proposed clamming ground is a waterway crossroads serving many people than just adjacent residents. It's clear to me the uniqueness of this proposed PCG area is established by the fact it's important to so many people. It's very important to recognize the Bennett Creek Channel that passes through PCG area is a key boating access to and from the open waters of the bay. And that would be all these creeks. Boyd Bay is basically unpopulated. All come out, everybody comes out and goes right on through that Bennett Creek Channel headed to the PCG area all the way to open water. In addition, the narrow and channel reaches of the channel service three marinas upstream in White House Cove. You can see those indicated there, along with multiple private docks that are home port to estimated 250 to 300 watercraft in these upstream creeks. In addition, the city has invested in a public boat ramp to encourage access to open water and the Blue Way. Two of the marinas have waterfront restaurants that attract many boating visitors who are touring the bay. Moreover, broad, unrestricted access is very significant given the dynamic shifting bottom of sandbars that need to be traversed to reach open waters for residents along the Pecosin shoreline in Roberts Creek. And when I talk about that, I'm talking about this about a mile of shoreline here and Roberts Creek, which you can see is a very little bit of a channel that you still got to know exactly where you're going to come out of Roberts Creek. So this is why maintaining the Bennett Creek Channel area clear of any potential hazard and interference from oyster cage operations is so important. So let's take a little closer look. As you can see on this chart, the United States Coast Guard map shows that all boating traffic accessing open water from upstream must pass through the narrow and shallow sections of the Bennett Creek Channel. The shallow section, seaward of Cow Island, is exposed to long, fat, high-energy waves that create dynamic sandy bottom that regularly changes water depth significantly. Blue dashed line indicates the marked shallow channel, but in reality, boats spread out into larger green dashed area that is the thoroughfare. So this thoroughfare is a very shallow in places because of the exposure. If leased, cages and markers placed in this area would be a serious hazard to management, especially if they're placed in the area north of the thoroughfare or channel, which one lease application is. Such markers and structures can be displaced, further increasing the hazard, especially in inclement weather. So these pictures here generally illustrate, you know, the narrow part of the channel as you start in the shallow area. You can see we get a lot of visitors.
Yep.
This one, Buggy. We're already seeing examples of these dangers in part of the creek upstream that likely have cages deployed on existing leases. Did families of this pontoon boat pay attention to markers indicating cages maybe on the bottom when they decide to park the boat and dive in? They probably never realized what a near miss it was. Next, I'd like to comment about the water quality and for salve and native plants. This slide shows the Baylor grounds actually all the way across, one short of the other, and the proposed PCG area that I approximately put on this BMRC map, the green dash line. It's an important topic because valuable salve is important, and you've heard a lot about that today, so I won't go there again. But this is really prime real estate for salve recovery. The last 20 years of my life was spent preparing for and restoring oyster habitat and population. All up in the area right in here, around Bay Point, south of the PCG area. Live here, it's a pretty good view. We enjoy the benefits for all the local area provided by our oyster restoration project, and I appreciate the technical guidance and support. Let's see, provided by BMRC and technical staff and BIM scientists over the years to make this based on my observations and experience doing restoration, I briefly describe why designated proposed public clamming grounds, PCG, area, bounded by the green dash line is the best chance forests they have recovered that protects natives' clams, and I think that's very important because you notice that we got more salve, we got more clams. And when I was a boy, we could go out there and catch clams by the hundreds. And as the salve disappeared over the years, along with the clams. There were some commercial clambers too, patent clams. Huh? We saw they were there. So, also, use this particular PMRC map because it showed them 2010 recreation goal, restoration goal for sale. So, I think that's very important because when you look at this green dashed line, it's right in that, most of it is within the goal area. Now,
Mr. Cox, in the matter of time, we've still got about 10 items on the agenda. If you could kind of encapsulate, it's great, great information. I really hate to cut you short, but we got to.
No,
thank you.
I'll go very quickly here.
Thank you, Mr. Cox.
What I'm going to say is that this is what it looked like in 1953 and 1953 aerial. Dark areas of salve and primarily eelgrass. There's the 2002 survey from VIMS showing salve density. As you can see, it's pretty consistent, you know, with what we had then. However, eelgrass population along the coast and shoreline has decreased, and that's the message here. Even though there's a lot of variation in salve, during the 50-year period, you know, came and went, but it always came back. Last time, 2002, but the lowest density we've had in the 64-year period is right here in 2016. I read an article in the local paper that Ben's published, and the words that got my attention was these algae blooms that we're seeing.
Mr. Cox, really, the algae blooms in the public claiming area I understand the science aspect of it. I think it's off a little bit of the determination of the breadth of what the commission has to really.
Okay, but the main thing I want to make sure that the commission knows is that when you put in cages in shallow water, my experience, and also everything I read, says there's a macroalgae there that grows on the eelgrass and kills it. Them, I'm sure, will confirm it. But what I'm seeing it growing on is the cages,
mm-hmm.
bags of the pork. And the bottom line on that is that I'm concerned, very concerned, these cages, I mean, some of them were mine, because I had this leased to the south for a long time. And when I saw it happening, I pulled my cages. One reason I did it was that. Because this algae was growing on those cages, and best I could tell, that's when we had to kill off. And okay. It just happened again. We got a little farm up the creek, did the same thing.
Okay.
So the bottom line on that is somebody ought to be taking a real hard look at this macroalgae. I call it the harmful brown macroalgae. Now, the last thing I had to say pertains primarily in a bounce ahead to help out, is that oysters do really a good job pointing the water. And in the right places, you know, these oysters, that excreta or the deposition from the oysters stays on the bottom. I tipped over Ben's paper published a long time ago to determine that 250,000 oysters on 1 acre of ground on a natural oyster rock will deposit 13 tons in the period of time April through October of each year. Think about it. That's good. The problem is, if you allow these cages to go out here in front of this area and somebody puts 250,000 oysters in cages where they're on the bottom of floating, as we talked about, that's a lot of stuff. So my concern is, what's that significance of that? Recognizing you can probably get 500,000 oysters in an acre, bigger than the ones that we're talking about in the Ben's paper. And all that comes from the northeasters that are the typical prevailing wind in that area that blow this stuff inshore. And what's that do to the sandbars at that kind of rate? And that's basically my message to you. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Any questions? Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard?
Yeah, I'm coming back. I'm sorry. I'd like to finish up with...
Quite all right, sir.
This issue, which you've heard a lot about this morning, and I won't spend much time on it, we're already seeing the visual impact of aquaculture in the creeks along the coast. What we are concerned about, and we saw a lot in the photographs this morning, if this area is leased, is this type of visual impact, and you saw other ones, perhaps even more striking this morning, and the impact that this would have on both property values along the shoreline and impact on the city revenues that we get from associated businesses, from tourism using the Blue Way and so on. What I did want to just share with you is that on April the 7th of this year, this daily press article ran, "A view will cost you, but how much?" The article was originally published in the Associated Press based upon research conducted by Greenfield Advisors, a nationwide real estate research company internationally recognized for its as a leading authority on the analysis of valuation of property impacted by environmental factors. And their research concluded that an unobstructed waterfront view commands a 75 to 100% premium over no waterfront view. We've heard a lot about people, you know, I think many of these lease objections are people's concern over waterfront property and other property values. We tried to quantify it, and we used this article to analyze the properties that will be directly impacted along the shoreline there. The ones in blue, they'll have their access impacted. We used the daily press article method to try and quantify what might happen to these properties if their views became obstructed with markers and cage arrays, rather as was discussed in Rappahannock. We compared the land values of the waterfront lots with unobstructed views, these waterfront lots with unobstructed views, to the waterfront lots on the other side of the street that have views over canals and creeks. And we considered the canals and creek views to be obstructed in the terms of the daily press article, and we also compared both of them to those lots on the landward side of the street that have no waterfront views. This is what we found. Our study showed that there is a 40% or 54,000 increase in the lot value when you have an obstructed view over a creek or a canal, and in this area of our community, you have a 100% increase in lot value, the land value, when you have an open view over the water. And these results are based on our city assessments, and as you can see, they closely track the daily press analysis. These are real values. These are not estimates. They're of the assessed value. So what would we expect to happen if the best views became spoiled? And this shows that we would expect, if those views were spoiled by the sort of picture that you saw earlier today, we would have see a drop of $75,000 in the lot values, or approximately 30%. And our city depends upon residential properties to provide over 90% of our real estate tax base. We don't have a large tax base from businesses. So a reduction in value of these waterfront properties would lose the city of almost $3.5 million in assessment value. So to conclude, and I know you've bear with us on this. Just to summarize, these are the issues. We're consistent with the Constitution and Code. We meet all the legal requirements. And we stress that this is a unique part of the Pocosin shoreline with a wide variety of different uses. It's the crossroads of multiple local waterways used by our citizens and visitors. SAF has grown in the past, and almost the entire PCG area is a VIMS goal for SAV recovery. Leasing the area would create problems that will prevent the citizens at large continuing to enjoy the natural beauty of the area and could harm both shoreline property values and city revenues. for all these reasons, we consider this to be very much that it would, signing it as a public clamming ground will preserve the citizens' traditional rights to continue enjoying clamming and other uses of this last, the very last unleased area of the Pocosin shoreline. We consider this to be, to designating it as a clamming ground will be in the best benefit of the people of the Commonwealth. And I repeat, it is the unique features of this site that make it very suitable as a public clamming ground, and we request the Commission to accept staff's recommendation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Any questions, gentlemen? Thank you, sir. Yes, sir. Come forward. Oh, sure. Raise your right hand. You solemnly swear a testimony you give be the truth, whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
State your name for the record, please.
I'm Kerry Freeman, Vice President. Vice Mayor of the City of Pocosin, and just want two quick points to all commissioners, and we do appreciate you bearing with us on this.
Absolutely.
First one is the citizens of Pocosin are very happy to see you back in that chair.
Well,
secondly,
thank you.
I would refer you to our 14 May letter, the first paragraph. It says the Council of the City of Pocosin supports the petition, and I'm not going to read the rest of it because you have it there, but just unanimous 7-0. On the resolution, all
with every signature on every one of them.
Yes, sir.
And beautiful stationery, I might add. Thank you. Read it front to back. Yes, sir. You ready? Solemnly swear testimony you give be the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do.
State your name for the record, please, sir.
Charles M. Southall the third. I say that.
It's Stephen Southall.
There are four Charles Southalls running around here. We for sure will name some boys in the family.
There you go.
I am a member of the city council. You'll find my name on that.
Yes, sir.
In the interest of time, and thank you very much for your consideration. I do support this. Not, I'm here as a representative of the city, but I'm here as a personal citizen. The area that we're talking about, okay, I can speak about for generations, not just 10 years. Okay? My parents took me there to go clamming, fishing, crabbing, that kind of thing when I was a small boy. There were no homes there. It was a 20-minute walk from Hunts Neck Road through the woods, okay, to go catch clams, crabs. We used to throw fishing lines in the water, didn't catch bloody fish. We caught more chiggers than we did. but since a small boy, okay, we've used that area for swimming and fishing. Okay. To this day, okay, my family take their children, okay, my children and my grandchildren, soon a great-grandchild, go there, we get in the water. It's a safe place for them to get out of the boat. They can walk around, the smaller children can swim.
Sure.
They catch clams. There aren't many clams there, but there's enough. Most of the time we come home, we have enough for the clam chow. And I can't remember a time when we came home with not enough clams for clam chow. I do support this. I'm not going to keep your, take much of your time, okay? But I hope you'll find it in that paper.
Thank you, Mr. Southall. Any questions, gentlemen? Thank you, sir. Anyone else wish to be heard? Yes, ma'am. Here is your right hand. Solemnly swear a testimony you give be the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
You.
State your name for the record, please, ma'am.
I'm Kate Queen, and I live at 180 Beach Road.
Okay.
I wasn't aware of the premium that we're paying on the for taxes. That was not a fun thing to find out. But one thing I'd like to just reemphasize, and Mr. Southall just did too, but my husband and I have three children, and we've raised them there. We moved to Pocosin in 2002, and on any given day, I think pretty much from May through October, you can look out and you'll see during low tide, especially on the weekends and holiday weekends, you're going to see people sitting in beach chairs with their kids running around. One of the things that attracted us to it was that it is tidal. You can get down there and you can walk out. I mean, our pier is 300 feet just to get to the sand. So
expensive pier, wasn't it?
Yeah. but it does the job, and it gets us where we need to be. But I can tell you, the first day that we moved, and the movers were still unloading the trucks, our neighbor walked up with a half a gallon of clam chowder, warm, for breakfast. And he had a cottage. His cottage is still right beside us. He has since passed away, and his nephew is living there now. We go clamming. Yes, you do rake it. I don't go out doing a skip and drop a net or anything, but that's something that, you know, my kids grew up doing, and they have their friends that come over, and this is something that is a generational thing. So I don't really have any more of the technical stuff to add because I think it's been covered, but it is just something that I think about because I do support aquaculture, as does everybody else, and every morning, you know, I've got two dogs that go out at 5:30 every morning, and as I'm looking out, I see the boats that are coming up from the marina up the river a little bit or down the river a little bit, and it's like rush hour. It's beautiful to see it. It's very quiet. It's very calm, and all of that access, I suspect, would be interrupted because of if something were to go in the place where we're petitioning.
Any questions? Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate it. Yes, sir. Raise your right hand. Solemnly swear a testimony you give be the truth, whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
I do. I was going to spare you.
Your name, please, sir?
Dr. Charles Flynn. I live in Pocosin on Sandy Bay Drive.
Dr. Flynn.
Looking out in the area. Just sitting here all day, I thought I might as well bring up what's already been brought up is the ramifications of these cages when they're put out, and the study in 2011 where it was concluded that there was a major possibility of the major dislocation of these cages, and they would constitute a hazard to anybody in the area. And I was told by members of the staff that the Commonwealth of the State of Virginia cannot be sued, but if somebody is injured on water skiing or boating, swimming, whatever, on these cages, which we expect would be dislocated by any major northeast storm event, who is responsible morally or financially? I think it's something that should be considered. These things they're not crab cages. They're steel implements that can produce major damage. Anyway, sorry to keep you so long.
You're fine. Thank you for your comment, sir. Anyone else? Is there anyone here in opposition again to this matter? Seeing none, Mr. Stagg, did you have something else at this point? The matter is before the commission for discussion and action. Mr. Zedrin.
I move we approve the staff recommendation.
I second.
Motion made by Mr. Zedrin, seconded by Mr. Minor. Further discussion on the matter? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a safe trip back to Pocosin, ladies. Thank you.